taking abortion out of the criminal code.
It would be one thing if this were a bill just to remove that one section when there are other unconstitutional provisions still floating around in the criminal code, but it's not that. So I don't see it as any kind of affirmation of the Morgenthaler decision, although, you know, certainly this government, I think, would affirm that decision. At the same time, it is a good opportunity for revisiting the issue.
On the feature today, ARPA lawyer John Sickema with a look at so-called zombie legislation. In the news, the Alberta government is in trouble again on the education front. Some new statistics on euthanasia, along with word of the first ever conference for doctors who provide that service. And an update on that private member's resolution on pornography in the Manitoba legislature.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
The Alberta government is in trouble again on the education front. This time, the issue involves links to pornography from a government-sponsored website. The issue was uncovered by blogger Teresa Eng, who runs a site called Informed Albertans.
Basically, I was on the Alberta GSA Network website. It is a website that is funded and recommended by the Alberta government, but it's organized by an organization called the Institute for Sexual Minority Studies and Services, shortened to ISMIS, from the University of Alberta. And basically, I was just kind of exploring and looking around, and there's a section that was provided called community supports that were intended to help kids with their GSA, their Gay Straight Alliance. So I started clicking on a few of them, and they led to Facebook pages. And these Facebook pages were posting articles that featured extremely sexually explicit and graphic material, including BDSM and links to, you know, advice to pay for pornography and to visit sex clubs. So I immediately started screen capturing and writing, and then I published the information on my blog.
Within a couple of days of her blog post, most of the links had been taken down. However, Eng says there's a deeper concern at play here.
We are in Alberta undergoing this massive rewrite of our curriculum, and there's been a lot of secrecy about who's at the helm of that curriculum rewrite. And there's strong reasons to suspect that ISMIS and its director, Dr. Christopher Wells, are very involved in that curriculum rewrite. And so the concerns don't end with the removal of a few links. The concerns still remain of who is the government trusting with the care of K-12 children in this province.
The issue has also prompted a request for a full and formal police investigation on how those web links might have violated Sections 152 and 153 of the Criminal Code, which pertain to counseling minors on how to engage in sexual activity. That complaint was filed by Donna Trimble with the group Parents for Choice in Education. Some new statistics came out last week on euthanasia. The numbers are from Quebec, and they show that in total, 449 people in that province had their lives ended with the help of a doctor last year. The rate of doctor-assisted death is growing. In the last 6 months of calendar 2016, the number of doctor-assisted deaths almost doubled from the first half of the year. Sean Murphy is with the Conscience Protection Project. He's looked at the rates both per 100,000 of population and as a percentage of total deaths. On both counts, he says, after just 1 year of legalized euthanasia in Quebec, the numbers are well ahead of the early statistics from Belgium, which was one of the first countries to legalize doctor-assisted suicide.
The numbers in Quebec after 1 year of operation are at the level of what Belgium reached after 5 years. And if that rate continues throughout 2017 without any escalation, then it'll exceed what Belgium reached after 9 years.
Murphy's organization is dedicated to preserving the conscience rights of doctors and other healthcare professionals to not have to provide these kinds of services. He says there's a worrying trend behind these Quebec numbers.
From the project's perspective, the difficulty that causes is that if you have a dramatic increase in the volume of demand for the service, that can put pressure on people who don't want to be involved.
Meantime, there's an event coming up in Victoria in early June. It's called the Medical Assistance in Dying Conference, the first of its kind for medical professionals in Canada. Alex Schadenberg is with the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition.
I'm very concerned about the drift toward acceptance of more and more killing for more and more reasons, the cultural shift that appears to be going on. In this case, this conference on killing is to give physicians who are killing their patients a specialty to say, I'm part of this special group that I've received training, and that they say, now we have better rules about how we're going to do it. But these are, of course, the killers having rules for how to kill. It concerns me. At the same time, I realize that what they're trying to do is normalize what has always been considered homicide.
Schadenberg says it would be very interesting to find out if the event is underwritten with federal funds. So far, he says, he hasn't been able to determine that. And finally, an update on that private members resolution that was presented in the Manitoba legislature last week. Resolution 4. It mirrored Arnold Viersen's Motion 47, asking the federal government to look at the health impact on young people of easily accessible online pornography. The resolution was sponsored by Radisson MLA James Teitsma. He says, at the end of the day, the NDP used a procedural tactic to ensure the motion would not be able to come to a vote. Essentially, they filibustered it.
A lot of the comments that NDP members made when they spoke about the resolution were positive. They had a lot of positive things to say and supportive things to say, but they also played what they consider to be a political card by exercising their right to stretch out the discussion so that it wouldn't come to a vote.
Deitzma says it's difficult to understand why the NDP would actually do this, but it is part of the culture in the Manitoba legislature right now.
Unfortunately, that's the political environment that's existing right now in Manitoba, is that the NDP is divided amongst themselves. They've lost the trust of voters, and they're struggling to find ways to get it back. And in fact, I hope they had learned their lesson, because going back in the fall, we had a member bring forward a bill that would recognize September as Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. A wonderful bill. No reason to oppose it whatsoever. And they chose to talk that one out as well. And boy, were they ever surprised when the Facebook page of the House leader got plastered with stories of parents whose children had cancer or had even died from cancer.
The motion cannot be brought back, but Teitsma says the fact that he had good support in the gallery during the debate means his message definitely got out there.
I had over 60 people come, including families that had struggled with this sort of thing, and they were present in the gallery. They really changed the tone and the tenor of the actual debate. By being there, the debate was more respectful than it typically is for private members' business, and certainly there's a sense of accountability that the NDP members now have, I hope, that they didn't have, or they wouldn't have had, if I didn't have all those supporters present in the gallery. Now they know that I don't stand alone.
Back with more after this.
ARPA chapters in Ontario have launched a radio campaign to raise awareness about Bill 89. The minister responsible for this bill has said that trying to convince a little girl who thinks she's a boy that she's actually a girl is child abuse. The legislation has to be stopped. The radio ads are designed to raise public awareness of this issue. If you're part of an ARPA chapter in Ontario that's interested in taking part, or if you'd like to help sponsor this campaign, please send an email to info@arpacanada.ca.
And we're back on the program. We're talking about zombie laws. That may seem a bit strange, but zombie laws are laws that are still technically on the books, even though they've been declared unconstitutional by the courts. I've got John Sikkema on the line. John's a lawyer with ARPA at the Ottawa office. Hi, John.
Hello.
So the government's written what's essentially a piece of housekeeping legislation to remove some of those old laws from the books. There's a number of them, things that have been declared unconstitutional over the years, and things for which people can no longer be prosecuted. Fairly innocuous stuff about spreading false news and laws about vagrancy, for example. But they also want to remove the provision from the criminal code that makes it illegal to provide or procure an abortion. This is the section, of course, that was struck down in the Morgenthaler decision back in the 80s, and it hasn't been applied since then. Chantal Hebert got my attention last week when she wrote in the Toronto Star and intimated that the Liberals were actually playing some games here, that this was an effort to create some divisions within the Conservative ranks on this. Does ARPA have a position on taking this stuff out of the criminal code?
It's interesting, the article you mentioned that she makes it a issue for potential division in the Conservative Party, talks about it as a wedge issue. I suppose a more cynical view of this, you could suggest that the Liberal government would like to see the Conservatives become divided on this issue. But I think it's wiser to just see this as what it is on the surface. It is a housekeeping bill. It would be one thing if this were a bill just to remove that one section when there are other unconstitutional provisions still floating around in the criminal code. But it's not that. So I don't see it as any kind of affirmation of the Morgenthaler decision, although certainly this government, I think, would affirm that decision. But I don't think it's wise to read too much into this politically. At the same time, it is a good opportunity for revisiting the issue. A lot of people don't understand why exactly the provision was struck down. A lot of people don't remember that the Supreme Court tried to pitch it back to Parliament. I don't think the Supreme Court even anticipated that there would just be this kind of a void if you look at the language of the different opinions of the justices who wrote in that case. So it's an opportunity to discuss the issue again, but I wouldn't see the repeal of the unconstitutional section as a statement of Parliament's view on the issue necessarily.
So you talk about this is an opportunity to sort of reopen the debate in some sense. I know the We Need a Law arm has been talking about an international standards abortion law. I mean, it's the old talking point that we're all familiar with. Canada's the only democracy in the world that doesn't have any regulation on the matter of abortion. Is this a chance to sort of reopen that discussion somehow and say, yeah, okay, the Supreme Court in Morgenthaler ruled that that particular provision is unconstitutional, but can we take this opportunity to sort of reopen the discussion and say, as an alternative, the Supreme Court did tell Parliament to fix it, and here's maybe how to do that?
I think it is an opportunity for that. People may recall Stephen Woodworth's motion 312 a few years ago, and that was to ask that the government study or a committee study the definition of human being in the criminal code. The definition of human being in the criminal code, it defines human being as a person who has been born, right? Been completely born. And that can seem arbitrary. Well, are you not human before you're born? And I think it's a reasonable question to ask, and we can look with skepticism on that definition in the criminal code. But that definition has been there for a very long time, since the first criminal code, I believe. And that definition serves a certain purpose, and that is human being is defined in the context of the homicide provisions of the criminal code. So it's saying if you kill someone after they're born, it's homicide. And it had always been, if you killed someone before they're born, it was procuring a miscarriage. And that wasn't because society didn't see the unborn as human. It's because, as one judge pointed out in the Winnipeg Child decision, when we didn't have the kind of medical knowledge that we have today, evidentiary concerns necessitated what's called the born alive rule. And that's what's reflected in the definition of human being. So up until the 19th century, when our criminal laws started to be formed in Canada, it was known that many children, could be born dead, but medical practitioners could not tell for certain if a woman was pregnant before she could feel the child move. They couldn't tell for certain if the child in utero was actually alive. And so strictly speaking, to call even an abortion homicide would be difficult for reasons of evidence. Was the child alive at the moment that the instruments did their damage? That kind of thing. So it was still a very serious offense alongside homicide. So you have this kind of pre-birth offense, which was a very serious offense, and then post-birth was the homicide offenses. And of course, there's different kinds of homicide, which depend on circumstances that, are unique to those people who are already born. So that, I think, is why that was there historically. But now when we're taking away the offense completely, now we're removing it from the criminal code, you don't see that. You don't see the kind of pre-birth offense and the post-birth offenses. So for that reason, too, we can say, why did we historically separate the offenses, pre-birth and post-birth? And you can look at that in other areas of law, too, where why does the law treat the unborn differently? It recognizes them. They have a certain status, but this kind of born alive rule, even if a child is injured in the womb, the child can't be compensated for the injury until the child is born, because we would want to see, what harm was actually caused. We would have to wait till the child was born to see that. So that's all kind of part of the historical development of our law in a number of areas. It has to do with limited knowledge of the unborn. And so I think that bringing us to today, where all of these things are worth looking at again, the definition of human being, the way the unborn are treated in other areas of law, and as you mentioned, the international standards, all that kind of where that brings us today is if we're going to say, okay, the criminal code says human being is those who are born, let's talk again about those who are unborn, like all these other countries have, and the international standards law, while maybe not the law that we would ultimately hope for in the long term, would start to introduce some criminal code protections for the unborn. not allowing abortion for no reason, not allowing abortion after a certain gestational period except to save the life of the mother, those kinds of things that are in the international standards bill that ARPA has drafted.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.